Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
Well, it seems the internet is all a tizzy about the latest Taylor Swift's album. Actually, the topics we're going to cover today, Steve, it seems like the internet is in a tizzy on almost all of them, but we'll get to all of that in a minute. So we'll start with Taylor Swift's new album, which for some reason I'd heard that the grammar apparently wasn't right. It's the Tortured Poets Department. Apparently the apostrophe's in the wrong spot. I don't know, but, you know, that's just one of the elements, you know, that sets the internet on fire with this stuff. And, you know,
could be poetic license, Ben, we don't know.
Well, it is. Why can't we just accept it for what it is? Like, I'm sure these things would have been checked beforehand. They don't just, like, you know, throw them out there. And of course, you know, like, you know, and this is the marketing angle, is, you know, dropping a second album, which was the anthology 2 hours later or whatever it was. And, you know, it's like, fantastic. Now, obviously, you know, it sounds like we're making fun here. You know, I'm okay with her music. I'm not necessarily a fan of it. I can understand why she's well regarded as an artist. Like, I think there's a lot to respect there in terms of the amount of effort and the fact that she writes her songs and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's kind of like old school in a sense. You know, if you think of the big stars of the past, she's kind of sitting in that zone. But, of course, she's in a different world environment, you know, with the internet, social media, the ability to talk directly to her fans, et cetera, which, you know, previous artists might not have had. But the fact that it just sort of sets off this whole discussion online, you know, about, you know, what all of her, you know, what her album's about. Like, I got the gist that, you know, it's like the ultimate, you know, like charting of her romantic history almost, with all of her ex-boyfriends, which is kind of like become a cliche now in terms of her music. You don't want to end up in one of her songs, kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know what you thought of all of that, but I just thought, I just sort of sit there bemused, looking at how fired up people get in online. Like, wouldn't this happen, I don't know, I guess in the past it would have happened in person or, you know, with your friends or whatever, but it just, I don't know. I don't know if I have the energy to, you know, say if I was a super fan like that. Or maybe I would if I was a super fan. I'd need to channel that energy somewhere.
Well, if you were a super fan, you'd probably be able to chart Taylor Swift's entire career with the smartphone, the rise of the smartphone. There's no question she is the first artist of the smartphone era and the number one artist of the smartphone era. So, as you say, you know, I guess for the old timers and, you know, if we've got any 90-year-olds listening, you know, if you're into Elvis, you know, like you could go and you could tell your friends you were into Elvis, and if they weren't, they'd just tell you to your face and then everyone would go home. Today, we can keep, you know, like arguing about whether she's the best in the world. We can argue about, well, we can't argue. We know she's a billion-dollar artist, you know. These discussions on the internet, as we know, are one, polarizing, and two, they're endless. They just go around in circles, echoing. So, good on you, Tay Tay. We love you, but I'm not going to go mad.
Absolutely. All right, before we get back to more internet madness, let's maybe focus on a nice serious science topic here, which came from Science Alert, being Venus is leaking carbon and oxygen and they don't know why. Obviously, you know, the idea that, you know, a planet is a self-contained ball with a hard barrier is obviously a little bit ridiculous. You'd expect there'd be a bit of leakage or whatnot. I guess I picked on this topic only because of, you know, there were references in there about, you know, that the similarity with Earth in a way, atmospherics aside, of course, but, you know, the size, etc. And, you know, much of the conversation is obviously taken up by going to Mars and, you know, Mars is really, I guess, the one that really captures everyone's attention because, I guess, what, it's easier to terraform than something like Venus, which is in the opposite end of the spectrum.
We can go to Mars. If we went to Venus, nobody's quite sure what's going to happen. Like, the best hope we've got is we could have some sort of balloon-like structure that would float, or just like a cork in the ocean, but in Venus's atmosphere. But no one really knows how to do that, so Mars is actually a much better bet, safer anyway, less risk.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it also kind of highlights the almost like the polar opposites, no pun intended there, of the two planets. And we're kind of in the... It really is funny when you look at it that way, isn't it? Like, Earth is literally in the middle of physically, you know, relatively speaking, in between
these
two planets.
We're in that Goldilocks zone.
We're just right, and, you know, Mars is too cold and Venus is just that little bit too hot.
Yep, that's right. You know, it is amazing. You know, if Venus had been a little bit further out and Earth had been a little bit closer to Mars, you know, I guess history of the cosmos could have been different, certainly in our solar system.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention here too was there was some discussion there around how it doesn't have quite the traditional magnetic field as well, which is quite interesting. Obviously, encourage people to look up anything sort of related to the universe and how it works, etc. It's a good way to get your head out of like sort of everyday life on Earth, because what happens out there can almost seem counterintuitive to our own lived experience on Earth.
Very much so. I mean, it's impossible, you know, to imagine that it could have happened. We could have had a sister planet that almost would have been habitable. But there's the argument that Venus perhaps once was. But, you know, now, of course, it's literally a hellhole. It has the hottest average temperature and crushing pressures, and I think they've sent a lot of probes there, and I don't think any have lasted much longer than a couple of minutes. Maybe the most recent one, once they get to the ground, the pressure, the temperature's over 400 degrees Celsius. The pressure is something like, I don't know, 10 atmospheres or something like that, and it's raining sulfuric acid. It's not a nice place.
It sounds wonderful when you put it like that. Absolutely. All righty. All right, we'll move on to our two remaining topics, which are tech-related, and we've spoken before about Apple and its woes in the EU, particularly around the App Store, and now I guess this is more, I guess what, Apple... getting ahead of the curve here before they, I guess, pull some more regulation shenanigans on them. This idea that the European regulators will soon approve Apple's plan to open up tap to pay, the functionality of the NFC chip, for lack of a better term, to banks and payment providers. This is just a trend. And it'll be interesting to see how other countries, obviously Europe as a bloc is doing this, but, you know, how other countries are dealing with this sort of, I don't know if you want to call it a backlash against big tech. Okay, we're picking on Apple here for opening up, you know, their payment system to third parties. But it's a broader trend that's happening, you know, across big tech that, you know, we have to rein them in kind of thing before they lock everything up to suit their own purposes. I guess that's kind of the approach they're taking.
Yeah, look, I think regulators are realizing the risk. Maybe, you know, it might be dawning on our regulators in Australia, but the EU realizes that these are very powerful, giant companies cashed up in the States. And I think just Europe by its nature, you know, culturally and it's, you know, the age of the nations within Europe, they understand that, you know, they can lose, I guess, sovereign access to their own data. They can lose sovereign access to markets, you know, effectively, you know, a tech company comes in, all the work goes overseas and there's no ownership or ability for people within that European bloc to have control, I guess, over choice within that tech sector. So, you know, the EU is probably one of the few, blocks that has the trading power to be able to do that. And they're making sure that Apple at least are getting on the front foot and doing things before they have to step in.
It's probably worth mentioning too about in the US, the DOJ, they're launching an antitrust lawsuit against Apple for monopolizing, you know, or set it, or supposedly setting up a monopoly with the iPhone in the States is like a corollary as well that that is interesting, and to see where they go. I guess the danger, I guess, is you'd want these regulators to be up on the tech. So, you know, I think this all came down to, you know, like things like mandating USB-C, for instance, but taking forever to get there. And if you take too long, given how fast tech moves, you could end up putting in a regulation that ends up becoming outdated pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. I think the regulators in the States are becoming a lot more sensitive and a lot more, I think, knowledgeable. I mean, the market is mature now. Even, and we say this all the time about how quickly the market sort of evolves. Even 5 years ago, would you be able to sort of pass laws to open up or prevent, you know, anti-competitive behaviours? Maybe not. You know, and I think we've seen over the last 10 years, Apple, Google, Meta, you know, really taking, Amazon, taking advantage of the continuing evolution. I think the evolution of these markets has slowed now, and maybe the regulators are catching up. So maybe now we'll start to see either a need for new market trends for the tech giants, or maybe they'll find themselves having to respond.
Mm, absolutely. That might actually be a nice side step into a new product category, or the implosion of one. Obviously, the latest internet tizzy is reaction to Marcus Brownlee's review of the Humane AI pin. And before we get into that part of it, I just wanted to like sort of say that when I first heard about the Humane AI pin, I was like, yeah, nice try. A Star Trek communicator might look good on TV, but it's really not, you know, in practice that useful. I got what that, like, the founders were, like, I remember them, there was a video of them, like, presenting it, saying that, you know, they're trying to move beyond the screen and all of that. But there's a reason why a screen is useful, you know, and why it's become so ubiquitous. And unfortunately, the execution of this pin sort of doesn't help the cause in terms of trying to get away from the screen, because you know, it just doesn't, it doesn't have that level of responsiveness that you would expect. And you know, and that sort of neatly dovetails into the review. But just before we get into that, what were your thoughts on the pin when you first heard about it?
I don't want to be negative, but I am. Like you, I just never thought it was going to work. It's a great idea, and one day we'll have the tech for it. But, you know, I think this is one of these things which you pitch it to the right crowd. They get super excited. We're going to get a jump on the market. We're going to be first. We're going to be the next big thing in the tech world. And then you come up with a product that just doesn't even get close. I mean, we're not even talking, you know, like a fold phone, which we wish was a little bit better or more useful, and some people love them. We're talking about something that promises to replace your smartphone and quite simply doesn't.
Yeah, and it's a bit galling when it comes at a $699 US price tag and a 24-month subscription that you have to pay for.
Well, that's it. And let's face it, it's a wearable. So let's look at the next class of wearable, which is the watch. Okay, where are watches? If watches aren't doing it, then I can't see how a pin can. And if they ever get around to getting the pin to do what it's going to do, I reckon the watch will get there first.
Absolutely.
Unless, of course, you're wearing a Lycra jumpsuit.
And well, then the pin might work.
And working on the Enterprise.
Absolutely. So let's just touch on this, the hoo-ha over the review. Now, I watched his Marcus's review. Obviously, anyone that doesn't know him should know him by now. He's like the top tech YouTuber reviewer guy. He does a lot of good videos. He actually gets criticized for being too positive and not really raking people over the coals more. So then he comes along and he does a review where he does that. And to be honest, I watched the review and he was not, his tone was not sensationalist or harsh or anything like that. He just simply said, look, the vibe was like, I want this to be good, but it just isn't. And then when you have, he literally demonstrates how it doesn't work. So there's no tricky editing or anything like that. He's just got the camera on him and he's using it, and you can see it not working in real time. You know, the best one being when he did effectively a Google search on the pin. He then picked up his phone, did the search. The phone had it for the response in a few seconds. He put his phone down and then the pin responded 10 seconds after that or thereabouts. And, you know, examples like that, you just can't get around it. Like, you know, he's effectively proving in real time there why he's saying it's not a good product. And of course, there was this whole thing where he then released a subsequent video that people were criticizing him for being so harsh on the pin. And that, you know, his words, given his position on YouTube and his ability and reach, that, you know, he could, like, send the stock price down for Humane and destroy the company. And he was saying, no, you know, I was only saying what a whole bunch of other people were saying, and effectively a bad product kills a company.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I'm pretty sure that the Humane AI pin will die by its own death. And if I signed up for a 24-month subscription and got a product that worked like that, I'd be wanting my 24-month subscription refunded and a refund on the pin. So, you know, it is interesting, because this idea that somehow an influencer can kill a product that's rubbish is an interesting notion. I can understand how an influencer can make a product that's rubbish, like in that they endorse it and everyone runs out and gets it. And like, you know, I can see it working in a positive sense. I can't see it working in a negative sense. And I don't think any blogger, especially, you know, one as even as this guy, should have to even answer any of this. But once again, the internet polarizes. I mean, who would be outraged about a review of a rubbish product?
Yeah, that's right.
Who can, like, you know, it's, to me, that doesn't even seem right anyway.
The funny thing is that this, you know, going full circle, you know, we talked about the Taylor Swift reaction. We're living in this social media, internet goes nuts era. If you wind the clock back 20 years, maybe, the Humane AI pin comes out, say, and the Wall Street Journal does that review. No one would have said anything. They would have just listened to what the Wall Street Journal had to say, or New York Times, or whoever, you know, whatever big publication, you know, is up on that. They're the authority on it. And nobody would have said anything. It wouldn't have blown up into, you know, whatever this is. Like, I guess the interesting thing is that, you know, this, you get a YouTuber copping flack for just stating like what he thought.
On the internet, everybody's an expert, everyone's outraged, and everyone is the opposite of someone else. And that's that.
And that is that, absolutely. All right, Steve, we might wrap it up there. Might have to go watch more of his reviews. it'll be interesting. Maybe something we can look at in a future episode. It's one thing that last topic did bring up was this idea of what's replacing the smartphone. And it seems like we're still not anywhere near close to that yet.
No, you know, as I said, if it's going to be a wearable, it's probably going to be a watch. I would have thought you could put all the functionality of the pin into a watch at some stage, not yet. So, you know, I think we're stuck with our phones for now.
Absolutely. All right, on that note, that's it for this week's episode, and we'll catch you next time.